Welcome to the Confluence Investment Management Biweekly Asset Allocation Report for June 30th, 2025. I'm Phil Adler. Tax and spending bills always have the potential to shake up the financial markets. One provision inside this year's bill gets some special attention in this week's report. Confluence Associate Market Strategist and Certified Business Economist Thomas Wash joins us to discuss Section 899, known as the Revenge Tax. Thomas, you call this the hidden battle in the big, beautiful bill. Why?
This title highlights a crucial but overlooked aspect of the new tax bill. While much of the debate has centered on taxes and spending, the bill has another quieter goal, which is reshaping the global economy. Our report zeroes in on Section 899, a provision that has made waves in financial circles, but hasn't gotten much attention in mainstream media. Though easy to miss, this small but mighty clause could have ripple effects far beyond the typical budget policies that we're used to.
What exactly does Section 899 in this bill seek to do?
Well, Section 899 is designed to empower the U.S. government to impose a punitive tax on income derived from foreign companies and investors from countries whose policies are perceived as detrimental to U.S. interests. This provision effectively acts as a deterrent, taxing the income these entities earn on their American investments. While the law's primary intent is to target countries engaged in discriminatory tax practices, its language is broad enough to potentially apply to any foreign nation that imposes tariffs, essentially a trade tax, on U.S. goods. The proposed tax would initiate at a rate of 5% and could escalate to a maximum of 20%.
Thomas, which countries are on the U.S. hit list for allegedly unfair tax practices?
The legislation appears to be primarily aimed at member countries within the OECD that have fully embraced the organization's global minimum tax. This global minimum tax was specifically designed to counter multinational enterprises that reduce their tax liabilities by establishing operations in low-tax foreign jurisdictions. However, the U.S. also intends to target the Eurozone countries due to their implementation of digital service taxes, which the U.S. government believes disproportionately and unfairly burden American technology companies. This dual focus highlights the U.S. broad approach to what it considers unfair tax practices.
So let me get this clear. A company with headquarters in, say, a European country, let's pick France, but with a presence in the United States, would face increased taxes on any of its income that is realized in the U.S., including income invested in U.S. stock and bond markets?
So, just for a little bit of clarity, this bill does have some exceptions. For example, a U.S.-owned foreign corporation is defined as companies where U.S. entities hold at least 50% of voting shares or total value. These companies would not face this tax. When it comes to income types, stock income is clearly covered under the proposed rules, but bond income is less clear. The current wording doesn't explicitly say whether it would be taxed. This uncertainty creates a key question for foreign bondholders.
What are we talking about in terms of total investments by foreign firms in U.S. assets?
The potential breadth of this tax coverage has been a major point of contention. Stephen Miron from the White House Council of Economic Advisors has stated that the taxes are largely intended to focus on corporate profits and for the most part aim to avoid impacting portfolio flows. However, there have been accusations that the provision could extend to include forms of income such as rental income, real estate investment trust distributions, gains from property sales, and even income from securitized products. The investment community in particular has been vocally concerned about the provision's broad language, arguing that it could significantly deter foreign investment in the United States. Goldman Sachs has even gone as far as to suggest that U.S. relisting of European companies' shares could be a potential move to circumvent the impact of these taxes, underscoring the severity of these concerns.
Well, we'll get to the implications for investors in a moment. But first, let's discuss the arguments forming around the bill. Do you think the Trump administration has a point here, that it's unfair for foreign countries to impose additional taxes on U.S. businesses doing business abroad, and that Section 899 might equal the playing field?
While I'm not an accountant and cannot offer advice on what constitutes fair taxation in a global context, I do believe there's some validity to the argument that certain taxes are designed to target U.S. companies. For instance, the EU's digital service tax, despite being applied to all major tech firms, clearly appears to be an attempt to rein in the market dominance of U.S. tech giants like Meta and Apple in Europe. That said, some of the White House grievances might be a bit overstated. For example, they have strongly criticized the value-added tax due to the rebates countries receive when they export goods, viewing this as a subsidy, and also because U.S. imports are subject to this tax. Personally, I view the value-added tax similarly to how a sales tax operates. U.S. exports are generally not subject to state sales tax, whereas foreign imports are. Therefore, while Section 899 have some justification in addressing genuine unfair treatment, it's clear that the provision's broad scope could be utilized to address other issues that are not necessarily problematic, potentially creating unintended consequences.
Well, the bill conceivably could generate a lot of money for the U.S. Treasury. What are the estimates?
Well, according to a report from Reuters, Section 899 alone could raise more than $116 billion over 10 years. And you know, that's a huge amount, and it shows just how much this provision could boost federal revenue if it's fully implemented.
But that windfall depends on whether foreign investment in U.S. assets takes a hit, which might cost U.S. jobs and slow the economy here. Do you think Section 899 may fly in the face of the Trump administration's goal to stimulate onshoring?
Well, you know, I think that's a great question, but I think the key here is intent. While Section 899 could deter foreign investment and contradict onshoring goals, I don't believe the administration intends to actually use it. Instead, I see Section 899 primarily as a powerful negotiating tool, providing the president with levers beyond just tariffs, whose legality has been debated recently. It's also important to remember that Section 899 wouldn't be the only weapon at the president's disposal. The president also has the power to invoke Section 891 from the Revenue Act of 1934, which is an even more drastic provision that could effectively double tax rates for countries engaging in discriminatory tax practices. Now, the distinction between the two is crucial. Section 899 specifically targets countries with unfair trade practices by taxing certain income, whereas Section 891 would target both citizens and corporations in a foreign country. This layered approach suggests a strategic use of various tools to pressure foreign nations rather than an immediate broad plan to apply new taxes that would actively deter investment. It's about having diverse options at the negotiating table.
The Trump administration does suggest that even if Section 899 becomes law, foreign investment will continue to be attracted simply by the size of the U.S. market and by deregulation initiatives here. What do you think?
How Section 899 impacts foreign investment really comes down to how the White House uses it. If investors believe the government won't apply it broadly or aggressively, then it's likely not to scare them away anytime soon. You know, the sheer size and attractiveness of U.S. markets, coupled with ongoing deregulation efforts, would likely to continue to be strong draws. However, if Section 899 is wielded in a manner similar to how tariffs have been employed as a frequent and prominent tool of economic policy, it could indeed have severe consequences for foreign investment flows. Additionally, there is a crucial time lag that should offer some reassurances to investors. The current provision would not go into effect until 2027. This provides a window for the provision to potentially be revised or even removed before implementation. Furthermore, foreign companies would also need to be formally determined by the Treasury to be in violation before such a tax could be imposed, adding another layer of deliberation.
Thomas, is there a way around this rule for foreign companies? Couldn't they simply start new subsidiaries in the U.S. that would not pay the tax because technically they would be U.S. companies?
Yes, absolutely. For companies looking to avoid these taxes, strategic partnerships or acquisitions within the U.S. would likely be a very effective way to do that. Think about the recent Nippon Steel merger. They successfully navigated a lot of hurdles to establish a stronger U.S. presence. That deal could actually be a blueprint. By creating a U.S. subsidiary or closely aligning with an American company, they essentially become a domestic entity for tax purposes. This lets them circumnavigate Section 899's direct impact and potentially avoid those new taxes or tariffs.
Well, there are differences between the House and Senate versions of this bill, but it does appear very possible that some version of Section 899 will be included in the final bill. What's the worst case scenario for U.S. stocks and bonds?
It looks very likely that some version of this tax provision will end up in the final bill. The White House clearly supports it. However, it seems the Senate is trying to soften its blow a bit. They're looking to lower the maximum rate from 20% down to 15%, which would certainly make it less controversial. Now, for the absolute worst case scenario for U.S. stocks and bonds, that would be if the law passed as is with the higher 20% cap. And then if the Treasury Department immediately announced they were already looking into countries for violations. If that happened, we'd likely see massive uncertainty in the markets, a lot like a Liberation Day event. Perhaps not as severe as April 2nd, but certainly enough to grab everyone's attention.
How can investors prepare?
For those investors who might be directly hit by this tax, it's smart to diversify into international securities. Think of it as a valuable hedge protecting your U.S. source income from these potential new taxes. Now, for domestic investors here in the U.S., you'll want to carefully examine companies that are foreign headquarters but make a lot of money in the U.S. If this law passes and is actively enforced, these companies could become targets. That would affect their profits and, in turn, their stock performance. It's about doing your homework.
Finally, Thomas, you do hint at this in your report. Why might the technology sector come out a winner?
As alluded to in our earlier reports, the technology sector, particularly U.S.-based tech companies, could emerge as a significant beneficiary of this measure. Section 8.9 could potentially pave the way for the White House to negotiate and alter some of the existing laws and taxes in foreign countries that disproportionately impact U.S. tech companies. If successful, this could reduce the tax burden on these companies operating abroad and create a more favorable global operating environment for them, ultimately boosting their profitability and market position abroad.
Thank you, Thomas. The title of this week's report is The Hidden Battle in the Big Beautiful Bill. And you can find a link to the written report, which includes some helpful charts, on the Confluence webpage, confluenceinvestment.com. Our discussion today is based upon sources and data believed to be accurate and reliable. Opinions and forward-looking statements expressed are subject to change without notice. This information does not constitute a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any security. Our audio engineer is Dane Stoll. I'm Phil Adler.